Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. This is podcast number 14, and we are talking to Nicholas Crimes. This was an interview that we had done actually a little while back, but this is the first time that we've been able to do it. We've just been so busy with everything that unfortunately Nick's interview had to wait a little bit longer than we originally planned. First off, thank you, Nick, for letting us interview with you. Again, apologies for how long it took to actually get this going. So this half of the interview is actually focused on an introduction to the Vortex approach. And as you're going to hear, there's also been a little bit of Star Trek banter. But anyway, I don't want to waste too much time, so I want to go ahead and get diving into this as quickly as possible. We have a very special guest on today. His name is Dr. Nicholas Crimes. He is a consultant anesthetist in both public and private practice in Melbourne, Australia. He has particular interests in patient safety, teamwork behaviors, human factors, airway management, and simplifying clinical decision-making in emergency situations. He is the creator of the Vortex approach to airway management and the Triad approach to crisis management. Nicholas also coordinates the international Easy Drug ID campaign, which promotes the introduction of human factors engineering into pharmaceutical packaging in an effort to minimize the occurrence of medication errors. So that's quite the background. It sounds like you've been pretty busy yourself recently.
The last couple of years since I got involved in the whole sort of social media education thing, it's kept me very busy in my spare time.
So the big one I wanted to talk to you about today, although it sounds like I'd have enough to talk about forever, is the Vortex approach. And I feel like if you're in emergency medicine, you do airway management at all, and you don't know what the Vortex approach is, you may need to go to our site at totalem.org or anywhere else and kind of start looking at those papers, because those are it's really impressive. I read it last night, the one that's part of the BJA. Because all of that stuff right now is FOMED, right? There was a whole article or a whole issue that is all airway and all free open access, if I read that correctly.
Yeah, the British Journal of Anesthesia has put out a whole special issue on airway management, and they've made all the articles there are free full text, which is great. And the Vortex article is among them. But there's some other great articles in that issue, so it's really worthwhile to look.
Yes, in fact, I printed off a bunch of those articles, so on my next couple of shifts, if I have some downtime, I can start reading in on that and maybe have some other new content for the show. The Vortex approach, this is actually your kind of second rehashing of it, if I understand correctly. You had one before, which was a little more text-based and was designed slightly different, but you did a really good job updating it as far as now it's a little more graphic in appearance, especially when you're talking about the different airways. Can we start talking about like why you updated, why you went to Vortex approach 2.0, I guess you can say?
Yeah, look, a lot of thought went into it. We put out the original version in 2013, and with no expectation that we would ever update it, we thought, look, this makes sense. There it is. And you know, through the Vortex approach, we had contact with a lot of other airway experts around the world who sort of challenged us and reinforced some of the ideas. And for a large part, what we'd done originally stood up, but we realized that there were some things that could be simplified even further. And I suppose, you know, in the second version, we really took what was an idea and turned it into a philosophy, I suppose, and took those ideas to what we currently believe is the limit of where we can take them. And it was really, you know, we were reluctant because people were so taken with the simplicity of the original Vortex. We were quite trepidatious, I suppose, about messing with it. But the end result was the plan was to make it more simple, more graphic, and to really make some of the terminology more specific was another thing that was important to me. And so we felt that those goals were really worthwhile and that we could change some things without really violating the underlying principles of what the original Vortex had been based on.
Well, and if I notice if you go to vortexapproach.org, which is your main website, It even puts in, I think, in a slightly different phrasing with slightly different graphics than that BJA article has. It's definitely worth looking at them both together just because I feel like they hit slightly different points in a very positive way.
Yeah, the look, the Vortex has always been a sort of evolving work, if you like. So even since the BJA article was submitted, which must have been sort of 6 months ago now, there's been some minor updates, predominantly to some of the adjunctive tools, but there's a small addition to that primary Vortex tool as well. Most of what's there is in the BJA article, but there's some small minor things, and certainly we added on. The other thing we did was with the Vortex was we wanted to make it a more complete package. It had originally been put together to be a tool for emergency airway management, for the management of the unanticipated difficult airway. And you know, I realized as I spoke about this that I often say to people, you can't have, it's unrealistic to expect you to adopt an entirely new style of dealing with something in a crisis when you're stressed and your cognitive capacity is at its lowest. You have to be invoking something that is really familiar and sort of brainstem level to you. And the Vortex, one of the strengths of the Vortex, I think, is that it doesn't require you to identify that this is a difficult or challenging airway for you to invoke the principles. You can use those principles for every single episode of airway management and make that just part of the way, the framework for how you think. And I think doing that and having that reinforced in everyday airway management makes it much easier to fall back on those principles in a crisis. And so we really wanted to reframe it as a tool for airway management in general. And therefore, we introduced some adjunctive tools for planning and for thinking a little bit more about what the options were when you're in the green zone of the Vortex and so on.
Well, and you made a couple excellent points on there with that, because it really is meant to be just an airway philosophy is the way I kind of see it. It's not a specific scenario, a specific case, which a lot of the other approaches out there, they're either core foundational type, I think is the way you describe it, where, okay, this is how you manage an airway, this is the different approaches, stuff like that. And it's something you can use at the bedside. You can look at the graph and remind yourself where you're at in the Vortex on where you need to be on managing this airway.
Yeah, I think that was a key principle of the Vortex was to have something that was context independent, that so many of these other tools relate to specific circumstances, and because of the algorithmic design of them, sort of linearity of them, they require you to have different algorithms for different contexts, and that's great as a foundation tool to look at before a crisis, but it makes it too hard to sort through and find which algorithm applies to this situation, and to actually access the information on those algorithms in the heat of an emergency. And the idea behind the Vortex was to have something that was truly universal, for that could be applied to both emergency and routine airway management, that was independent of what your intended first line airway device was going to be, that therefore could be used across, you know, all the critical care settings, from emergency to intensive care to anesthesia, and could be used commonly by, you know, medical staff, nursing staff, paramedical staff. Anyone who's engaged in advanced airway management would have this common template. And the idea was not to replace those foundation tools that provide that useful background information. I think that the key thing that we've come to emphasize over the last few years is that the Vortex approach is something very different to the guidelines. It's not something that's working competition with them or trying to replace them. It is a complementary tool intended to enhance your ability to use them. So what it allows you to do, it's sort of, you know, from a Trekkie point of view, I sometimes say it's the universal translator of airway algorithms. It's it doesn't matter what your individual institution uses as that foundation tool and what the mechanism they want to lay out for those specific context-dependent decisions. What the Vortex does is prompt you just on the absolute basics, the commonality that is that runs through all of those things, and just reminds you to do them. Because we know that, you know, a lot of the time when we see disasters in airway management, the problem is not necessarily that people didn't have, you know the latest trick or have the latest bit of equipment, but they just overlooked fundamental things. They don't move to the neck and do Kaiko rescue. They move to the neck without having an attempt at a supraglottic airway. You know, these are major omissions that are very understandable under stress. The vortex is really intended to sort of fill that gap and remind you to do those things. And then once you remember to do them, you can draw on that foundation knowledge you've been trained with to think about how you're going to do them.
Well, and that whole approach of being situation independent, and really just, I feel like you took a lot of factors from different systems, things that are mentioned, I think, all across FOMED and all across the, you know, journal articles in general and different airway courses. And I feel like you just kind of consolidate everything to one place that are the key points to remember when managing airways, such as, going to the graph here real quick. You know, talking about the lifelines, like using adjuncts, trying to figure out the size and type of tube you'd use, the muscle tone, which, by the way, excellent little picture there to try and use muscle tone. Is that supposed to be a six pack? I guess it's more like an 8-pack.
It was the hardest icon to design. I initially was trying to do a little muscle belly, but it just didn't look like anything. So I started drawing sarcomeres, which I wasn't really happy with and thought was a bit technical. And then as I did it, I realized it also looked like a bit of a six-pack as well. And when you say that to people, people think, oh, yeah, that's muscle tone. It's sort of got a dual function there. It works on a technical level, and it works on a layman's level.
One thing I wanted to kind of do here, too, is maybe go through a situation or two of, you know, how you can use this almost independently of the situation, but kind of walk through, okay, I'm looking at this graph and I've got this airway. As this airway gets increasingly difficult, how do I look at the vortex approach to figure out where I'm at and what I need to be doing?
Sure. Absolutely.
Let's go simple here. Let's just say that there is 40-year-old, I don't know if down in Australia, if you have large people, but I know here in my part of the world, we've got some people who ate too many Big Macs, and
we've got our fair share of those.
40-something-year-old male comes in, acute trauma from an MVA, has TBI, so he's got a decreased GCS. You know, you need to manage the airway, and prior to arrival, he's had no real airway management. So you're probably thinking this guy's going to need some sort of definitive airway. He's got facial trauma. So, I mean, you're going to try probably to do your upper airway approach, like your basic three methods that you're talking about in the vortex. So with just kind of that as a real basic intro, how can we look at this graph and this information on how we should approach this airway?
So I think this is a good case to sort of talk about the vortex as a planning tool. As I was saying earlier, is this you know, using it for more than when you're already in trouble, but to use that same template before you get into trouble. And so there's a tool up on the website that is a strategy tool, which goes through a lot of the preparation stuff. And that prompts you at some point to sort of go through what is your process for actually implementing airway management. And at that point, you can look at that, the graphic for the vortex. And as for people who aren't familiar, it's sort of divided into five areas. There's the three what I call lifelines, the upper airway techniques of supraglottic airway, face mask ventilation, and endotracheal tube. And then there's what I call Kaiko rescue, or what's sort of traditionally been called emergency surgical airway. And it really is. And then down one side of the graphic, there's as you mentioned earlier, Chip, there's these five categories of optimizations you can do for each of the upper airway lifelines, and the specific interventions apply to each of those headings depending which of the three lifelines you're talking about. And I think this is an opportunity that you can go through and before you actually have to commit to giving this patient a relaxant and potentially losing their airway. You know, the patient you're describing is in the what we call the green zone of the vortex, the situation where you can confirm that alveolar oxygen delivery is occurring, whether that's spontaneously or whether you're face mask ventilating them, but you know this patient is currently able to be oxygenated. And so there may be some urgency to intubate this patient and get a particular type of airway, but at the moment there is some time to look at what your options are, get the right resources available and develop a strategy for what you're going to do. And so you can look at each of those three lifelines and look at those optimizations and say, okay, look, manipulations of the head and neck. Okay, well, can we position this patient? Is he in a collar, or do we need to leave him flat? Or can we put him in a sniffing position? From the patient you've described, probably not able to do that in this situation, but you can go through each of those things and think about what are the likely things we would need to do to optimize our attempts at each of those three upper airway lifelines. And importantly, how many of those can we implement before we actually initiate airway management? So the idea always is, you know, to minimize the number of attempts you have. So you want to look at all these optimizations and say, well, let's implement all the ones we can on our first attempt, and then let's make sure we know what we would do if that doesn't work, and have the appropriate equipment there for if we need to have a second attempt, that equipment's immediately available. And not just for intubation, but also for the rescue strategies. And how far you take that along depends on the situation. You know, if you've got a very difficult airway, you might also move towards preparation for Kaiko rescue in those situations to some degree. And again, there's another tool there, the Kaiko status, which goes through predefined levels of preparation to initiate Kaiko rescue, from simply having the kit available at the bedside and knowing who's going to do it, up to someone being poised with something sharp hanging over the front of the neck. And that was a tool that was inspired by some work Scott Weingart did on his Cricon tool. And I sort of, in collaboration with him, developed that to sort of articulate with the Vortex, and that created the Kaiko status. So there's a few different tools there, if people look at the website, that would help you in that situation to really think about how can I make sure I can optimize all of these upper airway lifelines, decrease the chances of being of needing to go to Kaiko rescue, but also making sure that I am appropriately prepared both to implement my best attempts, my best efforts at all three lifelines, and an appropriate level of priming to do Kaiko rescue if that were to become necessary.
So let's say in this case, you know, they start, you do a face mask. I'd imagine you'd probably do a face mask while you're pre-oxygenating, trying to do everything else. So in this case, you're going through your green zone, which is basically reoxygenating the patient, assembling your resources, and developing a strategy. And then you, as you go through, you think about your situation, your airway, your patient, and basically who's going to be intubating. One thing that you do a very good job of on part of the resource, I noticed, is that you mention when it comes to attempts. So say it's time to intubate, we're going to put a max number on there. We're going to, I believe you use three. We're going to use up to three attempts, and at least one of them needs to be with the most experienced clinician. We need the best person on at some point. And it doesn't have to be three attempts. It can be less, especially if it's a deteriorating patient. But I like how, okay, let's talk about all three upper airway management strategies. So you've got the mask, you got a face mask, you've got an LMA, and you've got your traditional ET tube, which I feel like having those options and having them listed there kind of reminds you, well, if you, for example, the Baltimore shock trauma technique that Scott Weingart mentions, the idea is that if you fail with the ET tube, you can move to the LMA or use some sort of supraglottic airway. And if that doesn't work, well, then you've reached the, as you put it, the Kaiko. You've got can't intubate, can't oxygenate moment, and then you move to your surgical airway.
That's right.
One of the things I notice on your graph too is you've got it's designed as a 3D vortex. I mean, it's literally meant to look like a vortex for a reason. So you've got green on the outside, like a green kind of rim, and then you have blue inside of there, which you have the three airway upper airway techniques kind of divided up, and then you have a darker blue center. Especially as you go further down the vortex, it starts lighter blue and goes deeper blue, and then you've got that final green in the middle where you have what I imagine is trying to be your surgical, like a scalpel cutting through the skin marker.
Yeah, so I suppose anyone who's listening to this who hasn't heard the vortex heard of the vortex before, it might be worth
completely
going
lost.
Going to vortexapproach.org and looking at some of the graphics is probably the simplest way, because it is a very visual tool and it is hard to understand If you haven't seen it, but it's quite easy to understand. But if once you have seen it, but what I think you're getting at, Chip, is like there are really two images. One is a very simple two-dimensional image, a circular image that, as I described earlier, was divided into four areas. And the second one is this three-dimensional image of a funnel. And this was this idea I had, what I call conceptual imprinting, which don't go Googling it to find out what the psychological basis of that is, because I just made up the word. So the idea of that was that you could and we found this really works well in simulated practice, that you could take a whole lot of concepts and, you know, using a visual representation of them, have people understand them so that they didn't need to be specifically printed on the primary graphic, and so that you could maintain a really simple interface on that primary circular vortex tool without having to sort of put text on to explain all these additional concepts. I might just run through it to explain to people who don't understand what on earth I'm talking about. The idea that the vortex is a circular tool, and, you know, in that middle zone, there's the three upper airway lifelines of face mask, supraglottic airway, and endotracheal tube. And they're arranged in a circular fashion. And because they're arranged in a circular fashion, that means you can start airway management with any one of them and move between them in any order. You're not bound to the sort of sequence of a linear algorithm. And the idea is that circular depiction is supposed to represent looking down into a funnel, and that you either, if you have success at any of those three lifelines, you move outwards into the what we call, as I said, the green zone at the periphery, which is the area where you can confirm that you're delivering oxygen to the alveoli, and you have those opportunities to pause and gather resources and develop a strategy. Or in contrast, if you're having unable to get into the green zone following a best effort, which, as you said, is up to three attempts, but that's a maximum. Ideally, you do it in the minimum number of attempts, up to three attempts at each lifeline. If they are unable to get you into the green zone, then you spiral forward to the next lifeline to have your best effort at that. And so there's this concept, the sort of funnel idea, is that as a airway emergency situation becomes more acute and it's less likely you're going to get into the green zone with one of the upper airway lifelines, you're spiraling down into this funnel. That sort of metaphor of the funnel is intended to convey the urgency, the sort of ongoing urgency that things are going sour, that you are spiraling into a more dangerous situation, that the patient's at more risk. The narrowing of the funnel is intended to convey the more limited time and options available as to you as you get further into the vortex. And the deepening blue color is supposed to sort of reinforce that idea of impending cyanosis and hypoxia if you're unable to restore alveolar oxygen delivery. And so this idea of, you know, we're being sucked into the vortex. Initially, when we started training people with it, I wanted to have some statement that people would make to, we need to use the vortex, or what would be the initiation statement that people would sort of commit to going into emergency mode with the vortex. And it ended up that we found just naturally people started saying we're being sucked into the vortex, which I think goes to the power of this sort of this visual metaphor. This people really relate to this idea of, you know, we're spiraling down the drain here. And, you know, people started just saying off their own bat, we're being sucked into the vortex. And so that's become the phrase we train with now when things aren't going right. People, we sort of encourage people to declare we're being sucked into the vortex. And that's the, you know, the Houston, we have a problem moment of airway management as far as the vortex goes. One of the things that I was motivated to change in the second edition was that someone said to me at a conference that, you know, one of the problems is this spiraling down into a funnel, going down the drain metaphor might actually be a deterrent to people moving to Kaiko Rescue, because there was this whole implication of failure coming out of that. And my response to that was always, you know, I think it is important that people do realize things are going wrong. That's an important piece of situational awareness for people to realize things are going wrong. But I could see the point, and that was why in the second version we put that central bit of the green zone. So the green zone appears at the periphery of the tool, and it also appears at the center of the tool. And the point of the center of the tool is that it's, you know, in those rare circumstances where you're unable to establish alveolar oxygen delivery by any of the upper airway lifelines, Kaiko rescue is the right thing to do. Kaiko rescue is the path to safety for the patient. And so I think that became, putting the green zone in the middle, became a sign to people that once you're down the bottom of the funnel, there is a way out. And there it was there to encourage people, yeah, in that circumstance, that's the right thing to do. Don't be afraid to do it. Move forward. Get access via the front of the neck and get back into the green zone. And so there are two pathways to the green zone. By far the preferable one is via one of the upper airway lifelines, but in those rare circumstances where that's not possible, it's important that clinicians realize that moving to Kaiko rescue and doing that confronting procedure is the right thing to do, and will get them back into the green zone with those same three options of, you know, getting some time to make a plan and get some more resources and develop a strategy for what they're going to do next. And I think that strikes a better balance, to have that narrowing of the funnel to indicate the time critical nature of the situation and that situational awareness that things aren't going well, but the green zone in the center there to also reinforce, you know, this isn't a failure. This is just a necessary way to succeed now. I feel like I'm going to look like a complete Trekkie again by saying it's sort of the Kobayashi Maru. Kaiko rescue is for the Kobayashi Maru of upper airway lifelines. I think I've maligned myself forever as a Star Trek fan.
Let it be known. So now you got to answer, who's your favorite from Star Trek?
I still like Kirk.
yeah, I can see that. Yeah. All right, and that sounded like a good stopping point. So we're going to stop there. Next week is going to be much shorter. It's not going to be nearly as long. So understand that we are not trying to dread this out as much as possible. It just happened to work out that it perfectly ended right here, and that this is a good spot to stop before next week's. Just as a couple of reminders, please, if you can, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, rate us on iTunes, do whatever you can. It'd be very helpful for us. If you have any questions for Nick or I, just get a contact of us. You can leave a comment on the page. Otherwise, until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.